Charlie's been looking at the book of John, and you have to remember when you look at John that, well, the way John says it, there were a lot of other things that Jesus did. The last two verses in the book of John, a lot of other things that Jesus did, a lot of other things that Jesus said. If I wrote all of those things, you couldn't include it in one book. But he says, I wrote the things that I wrote. I chose the events and the discourses that I chose because I want you to believe in Jesus. And what we're going to see this morning is the way that everything in John revolves around Jesus. And some interesting omissions. And I find the thing that John doesn't mention almost as striking, at least to me, as the things that he does mention, because it puts it into stark relief when you understand why John is writing what he does. Now, in the fifth chapter that Charlie just finished, we saw Jesus performing miracles. We saw the response of disbelief from the Jewish leadership. In fact, they wanted to nitpick at Jesus. And Jesus does a miracle, heals a man, says, pick up your bed and walk. And the Jewish response is, you can't pick up your bed on the Sabbath day because that would be work. How silly. But nevertheless, that's what you see the Jewish leadership doing. They've rejected this tremendous evidence about Jesus. And he's going to keep doing the same things here in chapter 6. So in order to kind of understand what's going on, let's just go through the events very quickly. And then we'll kind of come back and we'll have some commentary on the events. First miracle that Jesus does here in chapter 6 is he feeds 5,000 people with just 5 loaves and 2 fish. It was a boy's lunch, so it wasn't like he had 2 500-pound halibut. He had a boy's lunch. Little bitty loaves, kind of like what you would have for bread at lunch. And it's just amazing what is and isn't recorded. So let's start John 6, verse 1. Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. He's going over to Bethsaida because we can look at other records of the same thing. So we know where he's going. He's going over to Bethsaida. Large crowds were following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up into the mountain and he sat down with his disciples. So we're with the apostles right now. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. So that kind of explains who's going to be passing through this area. Remember, all the Jewish males had to go to Jerusalem 3 times a year. One of them was the Passover. And this area where Jesus is a common route for people going from Galilee down to Jerusalem. So you got this Passover crowd, you got the crowd that saw what Jesus did healing the sick man, and they're all kind of joined together. It must have been a huge crowd that was passing through this area. Lifting up his eyes, seeing a large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus, remember, he's on the mountain with his apostles. He says to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?" Test. He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough for each of them to get a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." Now there was much grass in this place, so the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. Jesus then took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, as much as they wanted. When they'd eaten their fill, he told his disciples, "Gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up. They filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves that were left by the people who had eaten. So let's stop here just very quickly and let's sort of set the stage. Jesus crosses over the Sea of Galilee towards Bethsaida. Big crowd following him, and that's to be expected. He's been doing miracles on the sick. He looks at the crowd. Then he turns to his disciples that are with him, and he gives Philip a test, and Philip flunks. He just absolutely flops. Jesus said, "We need to feed these people." And if you look at other records of this, Jesus had compassion on them. So he wanted to feed them. They're kind of out in a desolate area. So Andrew says, "Well, this little boy has 5 loaves and 2 fish. Maybe we can use that." But I think Andrew was saying, "This is all we got." And I don't think Andrew was saying, "This is going to be enough." I think Andrew says, "You know, this is what we've got." So Jesus takes it, he distributes it to the men, and they ate their fill. They didn't just get a little bit, kind of, you know, 5 loaves and 2 fish. Maybe we do it like we do the Lord's Supper, a little pinch, and that's all you get. They ate their fill. And when they were done, they picked up 12 fragments, 12 baskets of leftovers. So, there's a lot of interesting lessons in that. Why did Andrew know that that little boy had his lunch with him? I just kind of get the impression that that's who Andrew was. He talked to people. And it doesn't really surprise me that Andrew knew this. We don't know a lot about Andrew, but he seems to be the kind of guy who just talks to people. So he feeds 5,000 people. Now, as you would expect, after they watch that, this big crowd has a reaction. And that's not, that's, you know, you just have to react when you see something like that. It's as if you've gone to the Grand Canyon and you walk up and you look at it and in dead silence you turn around and go back and get in your car. That doesn't happen. This crowd has seen this. And the crowd concludes that Jesus is either a prophet or the prophet. Now, there had been always in all of Jewish history an expectation that a prophet was going to arise like Moses. Okay, So they've been looking for something, and now they see this. Well, let's read verses 14 and 15. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, "This is indeed the prophet who has come into the world." Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew again into the mountain by himself. So they knew he was a prophet. They understood that. They didn't know that he was the Son of God. That's a different thing. To say that he is divine is different than saying he's the prophet. So they've gotten to the point, and this is the way that Charlie has been presenting this. They've seen the miracle. That makes them take notice. But remember, there were other prophets who had done miracles. Moses did miracles. Elijah did miracles. There were a lot of prophets that did miracles. That was the evidence that he was approved by God. So that's an evidence, but it's not getting them to the point where they have to say, "This is God." They're ready to say this is a prophet, but they're not ready to say just yet that he's God. And they want to take him and make him king, and they're willing to take him by force and bring him into Jerusalem and present him to the evil government that was there and say, "This is our king." And Jesus is not going to have any of that. Remember, Satan has done this already. Satan said, "If you'll fall down and worship me, I'll give you all these kingdoms." And Jesus, of course, refused. Jesus knows that in order for him to be the king, he has to go to the cross. And so Jesus is constantly looking at the cross. And he knows that even though the people in their misguided zeal would have made him king, that wasn't why he was here. Okay? So Jesus leaves. He just sends the apostles on, and Jesus goes up to pray by himself. He's not going to have this happen this way. Now, second miracle. This one we read about starting in verse 16. When evening was come, his disciples went down to the sea, got into a boat. They started across the sea to Capernaum. It was dark. Jesus had not yet come to them. The sea became rough because of a strong wind that was blowing. When they'd rowed about 3 or 4 miles, or some translations say 25 to 30 furlongs, so they've gone somewhere between 3.125 and 3.75 miles, because a furlong is an eighth of a mile. They rowed out into the water, 4 miles, and they see Jesus walking on the sea and coming near to the boat. And they're afraid. He said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. So Jesus, he's been separated by himself. The apostles get in the boat, they're rowing. Jesus walks on the water. It's all about Jesus, remember. Some of the other gospel writers aren't as laser focused on Jesus, and they tell us the story about Peter getting out of the boat and walking on the water to go to Jesus. Not here. John stays laser focused on Jesus. And that's... It just amazes me that John doesn't tell the story about Peter. But he doesn't include it. It's in Matthew 14, but it's not here. It's all about Jesus. They've rowed out into the sea. It's night. Storm comes up. Jesus walked to the boat. Miracle. No question. Absolute miracle. Now, this miracle is a little bit different than the other miracle that we saw. First miracle, Jesus feeds hungry people. Now, the miracle was the way he did it. Okay? That makes perfect sense. There, you have to, in your mind, separate what Jesus does from the way that he does it. And I'll show you why I think that's important in just a little bit. But Jesus feeds 5,000 people. Then, second miracle, he walks on the water. This is different because it's not necessarily to benefit someone. You see the difference there? This is just a demonstration that I am God. The miracles were a way that God could speak. He could say in this miracle, because somebody can't do that unless God is with him, that was the way that God could say, I approve of him. Then there's what Jesus does. He feeds the 5,000. And then there's what Jesus says, and we'll get to that in a minute. But there's a difference, I think, between a miracle and what Jesus always did. He fed 5,000 people. What do you think might have been the reaction of rabbis and the Jewish leadership if they saw a great crowd coming to them and they didn't have any food? What do you think might have been their reaction? Now, we've already seen Jewish leadership encounter somebody that was in deep distress. Remember the Samaritan man? The man that was on the road was beat up and left for dead. And Jewish leaders passed by. They looked at him. They went to the other side of the road. Can't have anything to do with this. But the Samaritan man picks him up, takes him to the inn. He says, take care of him. So that tells us something about the Jewish leadership, about how they live their lives. And when you look at Jesus, you see him always doing good. Jesus never did evil to anyone. Sometimes, and I think from the way that it's described, rarely did he perform a miracle as the means for doing good. He always did good. Every time he encountered somebody, he did good. Once in a while, he did a miracle in order to do good. So that's the second kind of the first kind of evidence that you see there is the way that Jesus lived. That's how you knew he was God. That's how you knew he was divine. The second way is God said, I approve of him, because he let him work miracles. But the miracles are, in my mind, not nearly as important as the way that Jesus lived all the time. Now, a little bit later, we're going to see the Jews that are there, this big crowd, they get confused about all of this. But remember, we've got two kinds of evidence so far. We've got Jesus always doing good, and we've got Jesus doing miracles in order to do good. And then we're going to deal with what Jesus has to say. So we've got the two miracles. After Jesus gets across to Bethsaida, along with the apostles, the next day, it says that he was discoursing in the synagogue. Now, the crowd doesn't know where Jesus went. The crowd is looking for him. And they find him. Now, it's not surprising that they find him in Bethsaida. And it's not surprising that they find him in the synagogue. So, now we start this long discourse that Jesus has with the Jews. The crowd asks a question, reasonable question. The next day, the crowd that remained on the other side of the sea saw that there had been only one boat there, that Jesus had not entered the boat with his disciples, but that his disciples had gone away alone. Other boats from Tiberias came near the place where they had eaten the bread after the Lord had given thanks. So when the crowd saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they themselves got into the boats, went to Capernaum to seek Jesus. They found him on the other side of the sea, and they asked a reasonable question. Rabbi, when did you come here? How did you get here? We saw the other boat. It left. You weren't in it. The boats that came from Tiberias, that's how we got over here. You weren't with us. How did you get here? And you know what's important? Jesus doesn't answer the question. He ignores it. Now, I'm sure, just from what I know about human nature, that when they ask that question, I just reasonably confident that one of the apostles said he walked. But John doesn't. John doesn't record that. That doesn't say how the apostles reacted. But if it had been you, would you have said in answer to that question, well, he walked on the water, by the way. But there's no record in John of anybody explaining how Jesus got there. Instead, Jesus addresses the question that they were really answering or asking. It's an unasked question. Why are you here? And Jesus says, well, let's just read it. When they found him on the other side, they said, Rabbi, how did you get here? Jesus answered them, truly I say to you. This is not an answer to the question. This is what they should have been thinking. Truly I say to you, you're seeking me because you saw the signs and because you ate your fill of the loaves. Makes sense. They were looking for him to do good. He says, you saw the signs because you ate your fill of the loaves. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man shall give to you. For on him the God the Father has set his seal. Setting the seal, the good housekeeping seal of approval, the heavenly seal of approval. That was the miracle. Okay? That was God setting his seal on him. That was evidence. They're there because they had belly food. And that's the reason that they followed. Then there's this second question. Well, really, it's not the second one. It's kind of the third one, because there was the unanswered question, unasked question, the one that Jesus answered. Then they said to him, "What must we do to be doing the works of God?" Where did that come from? What must we do to be doing the works of God? They had to be impressed that Jesus was approved by God. And in their mind, the prophet spoke for God and he told them what they were supposed to be doing. The prophet who was approved by God. So they said, "What must we do to be doing the works of God?" Jesus answered, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent." They said to him, "What sign do you do?" So this is not a proper understanding of what Jesus was doing. See, they thought the leader would do something that they weren't doing. You see the distinction there? What signs must, or what works must we do? And then they said, "Show us what you do, because you are not like us." And they've kind of missed the point. I do the same kinds of works that Jesus did. I feed the hungry. I clothe the naked. I help those who are in distress. That's how you know that I am a son of God. That's how you knew that Jesus was God. But they wanted to make a distinction between the work that Jesus did, they were focused on miracles, and the work that you and I do. Now, I can't do miracles. I can't do that at all. But I can do the work of God, and that demonstrates that God is my Father. Not the same sense that Jesus was the Son of God. But you see this confusion that's in them. He said, "What sign do you," or they said, "What sign do you do that we might see and believe you? What work do you perform?" Then they go back and they pick up Moses. And Moses is to them the illustration of the prophet of God who does work. And it's that work that means that he's approved. They said, "Our fathers ate manna in the wilderness, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat." That's true. And there's an interesting observation here, and I didn't have time to pursue this as much as I would like to. The manna, as far as the Jews were concerned, never came down out of heaven. Have you thought about that? It was just on the ground when they woke up. I'm not sure exactly what that says. But they said, "Moses gave us manna from heaven." Maybe they were wrong about that. They didn't see it come from heaven. Jesus said to them, "Truly I say to you, it was not Moses that gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven." So you have my Father. He was the source of the manna, not Moses. And now he's the source of true bread. And now Jesus says, this true bread did in reality come from heaven. Maybe they made a mistake. They said Moses gave us bread from heaven. Well, Moses gave them bread. It just appeared on the ground. We know that God was the source. But all of that wasn't clear to them. He says the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. So, let's see. Let's go on. Crowd asks a fourth question. Jesus responds and answers their question. The crowd responds, and after Jesus has talked about belly bread versus forever bread, the crowd says, "Hey, we want forever bread. We want the real bread." They said to him, "Sir, give us this bread always." And now Jesus really turns the tables on them. And he says, "I am the forever bread." So, right now, what we've got going on is we have the three evidences that Charlie's been talking about. The miracle, okay, that was the sign of God's approval. What Jesus did always, even when he wasn't doing miracles, the way that he lived, and what he said. And what he said was just amazing. He said, "I am the forever bread." And Jesus keeps going. He says, "I'm the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me will never thirst. But I say to you that you've seen me, and yet you do not believe. You know me, and you still refuse to believe." He explains, "All that the Father gives me will come to me. Whoever comes to me, I will never cast out. For I've come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me." Everything that Jesus did was doing the will of the one who sent him. That's why when the Jews wanted to take him and make him king, Jesus wouldn't have any part of it. He had to go to the cross. That was God's will. And Jesus was here to work that out. Not to be a king. He was here to work that out. So, they should have been able to see that. I can't imagine any Pharisee or any of the leadership of the Jews, if the Jews had said, "We want to make you king. Let's go to Jerusalem. Let's take it by force." The Pharisees would have said, "Come on, let's go." Jesus didn't have any part of it. He cared for people. He fed them. And he refused any accolades. He did not want to be king. He wanted to do the will of God. The will of God is to care for his people and to provide a sacrifice. Now, I can't provide sacrifice. I can't do miracles. I can't provide sacrifice. That's why what Jesus did is just as important as the miracle. the miracles meant that he came from God. The fact that he went to the cross testifies that he was divine. There's no miracle in the cross. In fact, it's pretty mundane. But that was the... If there's testimony about Jesus, I think the cross outweighs miracles. That's just my way of looking at it. I know miracles were important, but remember, there were other prophets that did miracles. They didn't always do the will of God. Moses did miracles. Sometimes he did what God told him to do. Sometimes he didn't. Remember? God said, speak to the rock, and Moses decided to hit the rock instead. The water still came forth, but unlike other prophets that God approved of, that were telling the people what they ought to do, unlike them, Jesus never forsook doing the will of God. Now, I think that's why John is writing this the way that he does. And if, as many times as I've read this, this discussion here about the bread of life, I think I missed it. I think I sort of glossed over some really important things. And this discourse means that, well, we know that a lot of people are not going to follow Jesus. They saw miracles. They were excited about that. But they weren't so excited about the mundane, I'm going to always do the will of God. And I think that's why they left. Now, the reading continues. He says, I'm the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will not hunger. Whoever believes in me will not thirst. But I said to you, you've seen me and do not believe. The Father gives me, all that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never cast out. I've come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. This is the will of him who sent me, that I should lose nothing of all that he has given me, but raise it up in the last day. This is the will of my Father. Everyone who looks on the Son and believes in him should have eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. The Jews grumbled about him because he said, I'm the bread that came down from heaven. And here they go, kind of nitpicking again. It's like they missed the whole point. They said, isn't this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How does he now say, I am come down from heaven? Jesus answered, do not grumble among yourselves. No one can come to me unless the Father who has sent me draw him. I will raise him up at the last day. As it is written, all will be taught by God. I just, as I read through this discussion, these three ideas just loom ever bigger in my mind. Jesus always cared for people because God always cares for people. And Jesus was just like God. Okay? Sometimes he cared for people and he did miracles. Most of the time, I think, he didn't. Most of the time, he had compassion on people and he helped them when he could. And then he explained it. It's what he said. When the leadership of the Jews sent the Praetorian Guard out to take Jesus, remember what they said when they came back and they didn't have Jesus, and the Jewish leadership said, why didn't you bring him? Are you deceived like so many of the common people? And the Praetorian Guard said, no man ever spake like this man. Nobody ever talked the way this man did. And you see that repeated over and over again. The people were astonished at his sayings. Not astonished at the miracles. Yes, they were. But not just astonished by the fact that he always did the will of God. But they were astonished at what he said. It was so far above anything that the leaders of the Jews would tell them. He said, this man speaks like one having authority. He's not speaking like you Jewish leaders at all. So, and I'm very sorry, I think I've used up all of the time. I'm sorry? I think I used up all of the time. So, any comments? What do you see in what's going on here? Are you surprised that John doesn't talk about Peter walking on the water? If I was John, I might have included that. That's pretty impressive, but
I think he saw so many impressive things. He said, I just can't write about all of this stuff.
Right.
So I picked and chose what I wanted to say, and there were just so many things, it was overwhelming.
Right. And I think John is carefully constructing an argument. I want you to look at Jesus. Everything else that happens is beside the point. I want you to look at Jesus. Yeah, Peter did a miracle. Walked on the water. What do you see in the way that John presents it here, the way that Jesus does miracles? Do you see that there's a difference between what he did feeding people and the methodology by which he fed them? The method was the miracle. Feeding people was what Jesus always did. Going to the cross was not a spectacular change in what Jesus always did. I'm not surprised that he prayed in the garden, God, let this pass from me. But nevertheless, what you will. That was not a change from the way that Jesus always approached doing the things of God. And I wish I could get to that point. That, you know, there once in a while I manage to do what God expects me to do. And I hate to say it, but it's so infrequent that it's almost like I surprised myself. I actually did what God wanted me to do that time. And Jesus never did that. And there's nothing surprising about the crucifixion. If you'd been around Jesus, you knew he was going to do this because that's what God wanted. And it would have been shocking if Jesus had said, I'm not going to do that. Jesus was not like the Jewish leadership. Jesus would never have passed by on the other side of the road and left that poor man beaten and bloody on the road. Jesus always did what God wanted him to do. So, I mean, for me, this is a really revealing discussion. I had never really thought about the underlying activity that was accomplished by a miracle. I always went to thinking about the miracle and forgot about what was underlying it, that he was feeding people. And they ate everything that they needed. And the reason he did that was he had compassion on them. Other comments? Anybody at home? Comments?
Well, if I might just go back to the business about Peter, him being left out of that. Every time I think about Peter in this particular instance, I think about the fact that he took his eyes off of Jesus, and it's kind of a lesson for us. Anytime we take our eyes off of him, we sink beneath the muck and mire of the trials of this life, and that's dangerous for us.
Right. And as much as I admire Peter, and I think you're saying the same thing, as much as I admire Peter, remember, Peter let Jesus down. When he denied him and said, I don't know him, and even got to the point where first he said, I don't know him. Then he got a little stronger about it, and he said, I really don't know the man. And then in order to prove that he didn't know him, he began to curse and swear. Because everybody knew that if you did that, then that was clearly evident that you didn't know him, that you weren't one of his people, because his people would never do that. So that's what Peter does. And just like Moses, a man approved by God who's telling people what they're supposed to do. Remember, Moses did miracles. Peter did miracles. The difference was, Moses sometimes let God down. Peter sometimes let God down. Jesus never let God down. So, when you get right down to it, I think it's the way that he lived that was so impressive. Comments, other comments. Thank you, Carolyn. Good comment. And I think the part of what Carolyn is pointing out is, yeah, I'm going to let God down. And Kim wrote an excellent article on the back of the bulletin today. I let God down, God will still take me back. Because that's who God is. He loves us enough that even when we let him down, he'll still take us back, just like he did Peter. And I take great confidence in that. I can't offer that as evidence that I am God. Jesus could. He's the only one who could ever do that.